We got the memo, the purple memo. Good morning, Vision. I can't believe that it's over. March, this is it. Last Sunday in March already. Wow, how time flies. So this is Palm Sunday, too. I love that. The beginning of what is called Holy Week, right, for the Christian world. And this month's theme was rooted in truth. And so we started off the talks with the power, which is the spiritual power where we all live and move and have our being, the thing that we are immersed in and surrounded by, and that is actually the very essence of us. And that is at our disposal, this power, the spiritual power of who and what we are. And then the second week, we talked about the presence and the fact that there's only one truth. There's only one energy. There's only one. There's no duality of any kind. There's no good versus evil or any such nonsense like that. There is only this one, this undivided, united wholeness of which we are some part, right? We are some part of that one life, of the divine. And then last week, Terry McBride was here, our guest speaker, and he spoke to the joy and wonder of truth, right? As we just stand in our truth and speak our word, how conditions around us change. So it all leads us to today, and today is the journey. And the journey is rooted in truth also. And I love this time of the year because this whole Palm Sunday story is just filled with symbolism, and that's the part of this that I just really love. You know, it's this whole Holy Week is so rich in the symbolism of our story, you know, and that's what this is all about. This Palm Sunday story is about Jesus' journey, right, to Jerusalem, entering into the city, entering into his destiny, into Holy Week that we're still talking about 2,000 years later. I mean, that's really some good story. You got to think about it. It's a great story. It's a great human teaching that we're still talking about it, you know. And that's one of the things I love about ancient scripture, all of it, is how relevant it is to us when we interpret it symbolically and not literally, you know, whether it's the Torah, the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Apocrypha, the Tao. Whatever we're talking about, the I Ching, the Quran, any of these ancient writings, the Bhagavad Gita, the Vedas, they're so rich in symbolism, and that's what makes them so valuable to us thousands and thousands of years later. No matter which one we look to, we value them not for historical accuracy. It's not about that, but it's about the stories. It's about the wisdom that they are transmitting to us over the years. It's about the guidance. And so many storytellers, particularly the storytellers in that part of the world, you know, a lot of times when they began their tales, they would say, maybe it happened, maybe it didn't, right? It's the story that counts. And they would start their story. So they knew thousands of years ago that these were not historically accurate stories. These were not true factual stories. They prefaced their storytelling by, maybe it happened, maybe it didn't, here's the story. Because it was to impart some wisdom to us. It was only, you know, just basically recently, within the last like 100 or so years, that it became literal, you know, where the Bible was taken literally. You know, God said it, you know, that's it, I don't want to talk about it. And it was never meant to be that. It was never meant to be that. The value in these ancient texts are how we apply them to our own lives. So let's look at this story from the metaphysical viewpoint, because this journey, this week between Palm Sunday and Easter, this journey is our life's journey, just spoken symbolically over the week. So stories like this one, like Palm Sunday, that are so rich in symbolism. You have Bethany, right, which is the city that kind of Jesus kind of passed through on his way to Jerusalem. I think he started in Jericho somewhere and went through Bethany. Bethany actually means house of figs, which that shows up later on. But anyway, house of figs, which can also be unripened figs. So this is potential. Bethany represents this potential. And then he's on the way to Jerusalem, which is the city of peace. And aren't we all on the way there? You know, this is our goal in life, is to walk through peacefully, right? We want to get to that place of inner peace. So we're all traveling to Jerusalem. And you know, on the way, when he stopped in Bethany, who did he meet up with? He met up with Martha and Mary and, of course, Lazarus, right? That's the big story. But Martha was the doer. She was the outer human. She was the human, you know, the human doing, not the human being, you know. She was the human doing. She was the list making, getting food ready, doing stuff. She was the outer human. And then you had Mary, who represents the inner. She was the knower. She was the intuitive. She was the sitting, thinking, meditating, inner being that we are. So you have these two aspects of our humanity. And then, of course, Lazarus, good old Lazarus, sleeping, asleep to his inner divinity, totally, right? He was supposed to be dead. Okay, fine. So he's in the cave. But this represents this part of us that is asleep, just asleep to our own divinity. You know, and then you have Jesus, the highest aspect of ourselves, the Christ consciousness, right? That part of ourselves that knows our oneness with all, that knows who we truly are. And so this interaction in Bethany, in the potential, this interaction between Mary and Martha and Lazarus and Jesus is the symbol of our own spiritual journey. What goes on there, you know, is about our own lives. You know, Martha's busy doing. You feel that way sometimes from Monday through Friday, right? You're busy doing the outer. And Mary, who is the inner aspect of us, thinking, deliberating, contemplating, meditating, representing that inner life, the intuitive, and Lazarus, sound asleep to his divinity. Until what? Until he is called forward by the divine, by the Christ consciousness. Until he is awakened to his own divinity by being called forward by this divine knowledge, the inner Christ consciousness of our own being. Ernest Holmes said this. He said, under some condition, we shall all awake from our sleep. This is the meaning of the saying that awake thou that sleepest, arise from your dead, and Christ will give you the light. So this is about what this is, this inner awakening, that spark within us goes, I can't be in here ignored any longer. We have to awaken to our inner truth, our inner divine nature. This is the spiritual path that we're on, awakening to our own inner divine nature. When we are called by that Christ consciousness within us to wake up. That's what the call was for Lazarus. Wake up. And through our conscious mind, we get in touch with that subjective mind in order to awaken to the universal oneness with all, our universal oneness with everything. This is our journey on this path of spiritual enlightenment. And we haven't even gotten to Jerusalem yet, right? All this just still took place in Bethany. This is good stuff, folks. This is good story. This is why I love Holy Week. I just do. It's so amazing. So the story goes, Jesus and his disciples gather outside the city of Jerusalem where they are preparing this triumphant entrance into the city. And what does Jesus say? He sends two of his disciples down the road. Get me that donkey. Remember that donkey we passed? Bring me that donkey, he tells two disciples. And if the owners ask why you're untying the donkey and taking it, tell them the Lord has need of it. Tell them the Lord has need of it. So Jesus enters Jerusalem, the city of peace. He enters into his own peaceful state, riding the donkey. The crowd goes wild. You know, palms are waved, palm fronds are on the ground, people are singing praises. It is a big deal, right? It's a big deal. Okay, so here we are again. It's about us on our spiritual path. Jerusalem, the city of peace, isn't that where we always want to be? We want to keep entering the city of peace. We want to keep entering that inner peaceful state in our own lives. Every waking day, every hour, who does not want to live in the state of peace? Anybody? No, I'd rather have chaos, you know? No, we all want to live in that state of peace wherever we go, whatever we're doing, however, you know, hectic our life is, we want to approach it peacefully, don't we? So here's Jesus. He's in the city of peace. This is our journey again. So Jesus represents the Christ consciousness, the highest state of spiritual enlightenment that we can attain. He is that at one ment with everything, riding the donkey. You know what the donkey is, right? That's our ego. That's our spirit. That's our human self. That's the doer. That's the human, immersed in the physical world, bound to the physical world. And now united, this is a spiritualized human being, awake, aware of the spiritual truth that we are. You have the Christ and you have the donkey together. They're together. They're integrated. And this is why Jesus said, the Lord has need of it, the donkey. Our physical bodies are the incarnation of who we are. We need the body to express God, don't we? I mean, how does spirit express in the physical world other than through us? So the body is necessary. But there has to be that integration between spirit and body, right? We have to be integrated. We have to be balanced. So the Palm Sunday story, this, riding in on the donkey, calls us to shift from the ego, from the donkey, and to bring forth the Christ consciousness through this journey. As we journey along this thing called life, it's about integrating, balancing. We can't be off balance. We can't be all this. We can't be all that, right? We get to be so spiritual, we're of no earthly good. I remember Reverend Kathy Hearn saying that. But we're all immersed in the details of the donkey life, right? We're not even looking up and knowing our spiritual truth. So, yes, we have need of the donkey. We got to get stuff done. Don't rid ourselves of the ego. We're not here to do that. We're not here. The ego is the individualized part of ourselves. You wouldn't be who you are without an ego. It's the pattiness of Patty is my individualized expression of spirit. We're not here to obliterate the ego. We'd be one big blob of humanity, not being able to tell one from the other. No, it's not about obliterating it. It's about integrating it. That's why the Christ consciousness is on the donkey, has need of the donkey. Right? We don't rid ourselves of our ego. We invite it along on the journey. We just don't let it run the show. That's all. We don't let it run the show. We get into many challenges along life. We are not meant to disown parts of ourselves. You know, trying to disown a part of yourself is like Debbie Ford used to say, like trying to hold a beach ball underwater. Yeah, how long can you do that? You know, before it pops up and it splashes you and everybody around you. We're not about disowning those parts. We're about integrating them. So the ego is a really, really important part of who we are. It is our individualized nature of spirit, right? It's our individualized use of this one power and presence. When it comes to our ego, we have to grow it up, not throw it out. Okay? So our journey is one of integration, all aspects of our life. And you know, we're back into this Palm Sunday story. There's a cautionary tale in the Palm Sunday story too. You know, that after the initial entry into Jerusalem, right, with the hosannas and the palms and all the accolades, Jesus and his group go back to Bethany for the night. They spend the night there. And then on the next day, they journey to the city of peace once again. They go back to Jerusalem. And on the way, apparently, Jesus is feeling a bit peckish, and he wants a snack. Now, he finds a fig tree with loads of leaves, and so he looks on it, but no fruit. And so I didn't know Jesus got hangry, but apparently he did. You know that hungry, angry thing? Okay, so no fruit on the tree. He curses the tree, right? May no one ever eat fruit from this tree again. And the next time we see the tree, what is it? It's withered and dead. Withered and dead. Could you imagine the disciples are like, don't get him mad, whatever you do, don't get him mad. Right? It's withered and dead. And so in the Bible it says, so when the disciples saw this, they were like, OMU, you know, look what you did to this tree. Oh, goodness gracious. And Jesus, what? He answers them. He says, verily I say unto you, if you have faith and doubt not, you shall not only do what was done to this tree, But if you say to the mountain, be moved and cast into the sea, it'll be done. And all these things, whatsoever you ask in prayer, believing, shall receive. Right? So he's talking about this power that flows through us. And when we are in alignment with it, we speak our word and stuff gets moved. Stuff changes. Prayer changes things. But the cautionary tale of the fig tree is be careful. Be conscious of what it is you're putting into the law. Yes? Because it comes manifest. The law is impersonal and infallible. It works the same time, every time, regardless of who uses it. It does not question. It simply goes to work out picturing. So what is your predominant thought? Because if your predominant thought is lack and limitation, by golly, that's what you're getting. So powerful, so powerful is this universal intelligence, and so immersed in it and within it that we can use it to hold ourselves down. We can use it for destructive purposes, like the fig tree, as well as creative. That is the cautionary tale, and you know, I think that is the one and only place in the Bible where Jesus really uses that power for destructive means. And Ernest Holmes said this, he said, anything you can dream of is not too great for you to undertake. If it hurts no one, and it brings happiness and good into your life, do it. And so he's putting that out there also. This is Ernest Holmes' version of the fig tree. If it hurts no one. So be careful, be conscious, be awake, and be aware about what we're putting into the law, what we are manifesting for ourselves. It is one of the great lessons we learn along this path, along this journey. The idea is, and here it is, the idea is because we are one, right? We cannot harm anyone or anything else without harming ourselves. Because there's one energy, because we are all one, because even though we are individualized, we are still part of this one life. The idea is we cannot do harm to someone else without it coming back on us. Because there is no someone else. Because we're all part of this one energy. God is all there is, expressing itself in diversity. But it's still all God. We cannot hurt anyone else without hurting ourselves. We cannot hold anything against anyone else without holding it against ourselves. We cannot want for ourselves good and yet try to deny it from somebody else. Because there's only one of us. There's only one of us in this room. It's spirit. Spirit just simply incarnating as all of us. You know that, I was thinking about the big Star Wars. The Empire Strikes Back, right? The old one, you know. When Luke is about to go in that cave, remember, he's like, ooh, it's cold, it's nasty, I don't know what's in there. What's in there? You know, and Yoda is sending him into the cave to learn, right? And so Luke asks him, what's in the cave? And Yoda looks at him and he says, only what you take with you. What's in there? Only what you take with you. So when Luke enters the cave and he kills Darth Vader, the image, right, the projection of Darth Vader, and the mask falls off Darth Vader, Luke sees his own face. Because we're one. We can't harm others without harming ourselves. We cannot expect to be able to do harm to others and not have it some way come back on us. And spiritual maturity, this journey that we're on toward spiritual enlightenment, spiritual maturity allows us to let go of those destructive ideas. We release the idea of getting back, you know, of revenge, all of that. We let go of our resentments. This is on the spiritual path what we must do to get to that city of peace, right? We let go of the idea that other people can actually let us down. How can they let us down? They're us, right? We let go of our expectations that people are going to be anything other than what they are, doing the best that they can. We let go of our expectations. What are the expectations? Are just resentments waiting to happen, right? You should be doing this. You should be doing that. We let go of that stuff on this path, on this journey to inner peace. We accept that people are generally doing the best they can with the tools that they have. So So we are integrating the donkey with the Christ consciousness. That's what we're doing. We are integrating it. We're holding, and with that Christ consciousness, we hold people harmless, don't we? We hold people harmless. We begin to see them as we are on this journey into inner peace. We begin to see people as God sees them, as innocents, right? So, okay, so let's go back to the Palm Sunday story. So after the fig tree thing, right, he goes back into Jerusalem, and what's the first thing he does? He goes into the temple, right? He really was hangry that day. My gosh. Okay, because he starts throwing stuff around, right? Driving the money changers out of the temple. And this part of the story, right, refers to the house of prayer being turned into the den of thieves. And depending on the translations, there are more. But it's about the practice of sacrifice. And it's about the practice of superstition. That's really what offended him. I mean, the money thing, too, is a whole other side of it. But the money changers were there to sell doves. Poor little doves. I got a little baby at home I'm hand-feeding right now. His mom got killed. It's so cute. Okay, so these little doves, they were selling these little doves for sacrifice, right? Because something has to die, something has to be bled in order for us to be okay. That's an old pagan ritual, by the way, that got incorporated into religion somewhere along the way. But it was a practice of superstition and sacrifice. They were there to sell little animals to the people coming to the temple to kill them, right? So it is this superstition of conducting spiritual events at the physical level that Jesus was really objecting to. It goes back to the pagan practice of you know, the blood sacrifice. Something had to die in order for us to be safe. It was a total pagan practice, okay? Something had to bleed, something had to die in order for God to make nice to us. I don't know where that came from, but there you go. This is the whole thing about the scapegoat, you know, the scapegoat, okay? Chiefly a biblical term. The goat is let loose in the wilderness. This is a Yom Kippur thing. Okay, the goat is let loose in the wilderness on Yom Kippur after the high priest symbolically lays all of the sins of the townspeople onto the goat. This is all in Leviticus, old stuff. And then the goat is released in the wilderness to die, and he has taken all the sins of the town with him. So ironic, is it not, that Jesus became the example of the most extreme pagan blood sacrifice? It's really what it is. He had to die so that we could all be safe. Okay, and that's Easter, and we'll talk about that next week. Isn't this a joy? Okay, we'll talk about that next week. So today, the symbolism of Palm Sunday as it relates to our journey along this spiritual path. So we recognized, right, the inner and the outer selves as humans, as Mary and Martha. And then we awaken to the spiritual nature that is within us, calling us. It is always calling to us. It's always telling us to awaken. So we awaken like Lazarus because we are called forward by our own inner nature. This is no God far away on a cloud somewhere. This is our own inner nature calling us to awaken to the truth of who we are, our own higher nature, our own Christ consciousness. And then as awakened beings, we integrate our human nature, the donkey, with our divinity, with our Christ consciousness, and we ride that sucker right into the city of peace, you know? We absolutely integrate our human and divine natures, because remember, the body, the physical body, is still only all spirit, right? Because it's all just energy. We just kind of think we're separate and apart. So we integrate this. And we enter into the city of peace. We enter into that state of tranquility and peace and contentment and surrender because we know who we are. We recognize that all of life is an outpicturing of the one life. And we cannot own our good if we're withholding it from anybody else. And finally, we do away with the superstitious, the belief in duality. The belief that there's anything outside of us that we have to sacrifice anything to in order to make ourselves safe because we know we're safe already. We know we are the incarnation of the divine. Finally, putting to rest the idea that we are broken sinners who must be, for some reason, saved by some ancient deity that lives far, far away from us. We must atone, okay, for some ancient trespass we never made. We never made. Ernest Holmes said this. He said, we make our own mistakes. We suffer from our own foolishness. And we also make the return journey to righteousness. God was, is, and will always remain the essence of life, truth, purity. Let us enter this essence in belief and be freed from our unbelief and our human mistakes. This is the journey that we're on. This is the story between Palm Sunday and Easter story, and it's glorious. I don't want to give it away, but it ends really well. It ends really well. This is the journey that we're all on. It's amazing. It is an amazing journey to come to the truth of who we are and to live that boldly and without regret in the world. It is the life we are meant to live. Live it. See you on Easter. Thank you so much.
Boldly, like my coffee.